Blog Talk Radio.
You are now connected to the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Dardy.
Taking on 2,000 years of indoctrination, 2 hours at a time.
Sink or swim, deep end information.
Asking questions no one else will.
Parabiblical research, spiritual technology, personal empowerment.
Be your own guru.
Master your own ascension.
Guide your own spirit.
And now, showing you how, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Dardy.
Well, greetings and salutations from sunny Central Florida. We've come to an end of another week, at least here in the United States of America. Some of you listening to us over in the United Kingdom and Europe, you may be a little bit ahead of us already into your weekend. But regardless, we welcome you, and we hope that this broadcast finds you doing great. And if it doesn't, well, maybe we can do something to aid you towards that end. I want to start off by inviting you to go to my website, jeffreydardy.com, christianwhistleblower.com. If you haven't been there in a while, well, you probably haven't been there because we've got a lot of new things, including a shop. So take a look there. A lot of new stuff, a lot of great stuff, a lot of fun stuff. Now you can get a shirt if you'd like to get a shirt. We've got a lot of things building up to help you indoctrinate yourself. And that's what it's all about. And you'll see on the website, we have things now. We've expanded our focus. We're not just talking about the spirit anymore, although that is the most important thing in my humble opinion. We're talking about spirit. We're talking about politics. We're talking about culture. And we're talking about life as a whole. And, you know, I don't usually talk politics much on the Fresh Daily Show, which is sponsored, by the way, by Fresh Daily Co., Gourmet Coffee and Skateboards. They're great partners with us. And we're going to be rolling out a new magazine here before too long as well, called the Unindoctrinate Yourself Magazine. Fresh Daily will be a big part of that. We're going to be doing some great and some exciting things as we prepare to get on the road, literally, and start bringing the Unindoctrinate Yourself Express to you. So we don't normally talk about politics on the Fresh Daily Show because the Fresh Daily Show is a bit steered towards our UK and European audience. In fact, to be frank with you, that's why I make this show. We have the Christian Whistleblower Show on. You know, 2 hours per week. It's from 8 to 10 Eastern, and from that makes it 5 to 7 Pacific time on another network. But we have a hard time matching up the feeds, and I'm not exactly a technical whiz. So in order to facilitate our great friends at Deprogrammed Radio, we do make this show, and it's my pleasure and my honor to be associated with John and Sally and the Deprogrammed Radio family, and my pleasure to be able to reach you folks in the UK and in Europe on a much more efficient basis. And I see our website just blowing up, lots of contact from the UK and from Europe. We appreciate it so very much, and I've had several offers to come over to Europe. We're going to try to make that happen as soon as we can. Now, it was interesting, we're talking about the idea of politics and how we don't usually talk about politics on this show because this show is a European European focused show, and we're you know, U.S. politics may not be the most exciting thing to folks like that. But the nice thing to see here is that I was received a nice email from someone that called my attention to the fact that President Obama had a great interview on the BBC talking to David Attenborough, and I'm not really sure what this is. I haven't seen it, but this is a source that I very much trust and appreciate. And he says that Obama is up to something strange, something strategic and not in a bad way, talking to the BBC and the David Attenborough interview. This person, who is an Englishman, says that the interview was fascinating because the American president was not being interviewed, but the interviewer was being interviewed by the president and openly saying Attenborough was his lifelong hero from childhood. Attenborough, of course, the naturalist and the most respected and loved naturalist in the world, and, of course, highly caring of the environment. And this person asked the question, is Obama courting the rest of the English-speaking world, particularly the British, being just fed up with the U.S. press and fed up with American politics? This person made the statement that it seems that Obama has seemed distant in terms of American politics and may, excuse me, be just tired of the bickering and party politics and is trying to pursue a different course of cultural politics. He thinks it's highly intelligent. He thinks that Obama, having tried to change laws, is going to try to change the way people think and feel. He believes he's trying to court the British and trying to get Americans to see the British as an example on gun laws, healthcare, racism, and maybe a little bit more political sense in my English friend's mind. He thinks that Obama's trying to get international pressure from the English-speaking world against his political opponents, and he thinks that he's leveraging the BBC's reputation as an intellectual and relatively neutral, at least in comparison with the U.S. media. He's really trying to, he thinks, make some changes on a global scale rather than just an American, and he's talking to the BBC rather than the American press. And this fellow, who's about my age, says he thinks it's the cleverest thing that any modern American politician has ever done in cultural terms. And it's certainly very interesting. Like I said, I've not had the opportunity, you know, to take a look at it myself, but I thought that was very interesting to pass along to our friends over the pond, as we like to say. And, you know, last time we talked about Paul. We talked about his creation of the plastic Jesus coming back upset. We talked about it really being the reptilian lord inflicting hell upon the earth. And we're talking about how all of the things that are pitched, proposed, sold as being last days related were actually, at least in the context of what we've talked so far, specifically destruction of Jerusalem time events. They are not any future foolishness. They are, in context, destruction of Jerusalem events. They're common sense destruction of Jerusalem information. There's no need to invent anything. And as we kind of pop back into Luke chapter 21, and you might have to even listen to the show back from yesterday, or actually 2 days ago. We're doing this Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You might want to pop back and be able to know where we were. And we're picking up in Luke chapter 21, verse 25. And, you know, these things are so famous, and really, I think, once you know, they're infamous. In Luke 21, 25, there'll be signs in the sun and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth, distress of nations, perplexity, sea and waves roaring. And of course, this is pitched to you over and over and over again, that it's last days. It's horrible coming last days, scary stuff. So you should be afraid. You should be very afraid. But let me ask you something. Since we're talking about the actual real context of this being associated with the destruction of Jerusalem. When the city of Jerusalem was set ablaze, when the city of Jerusalem was burning with a great and massive fire, do you think that the smoke from that great and massive fire might have caused the sun, the moon, the stars to look a little bit different, that it might have actually blotted out their light or made them look red, as the Bible talks about? See, when you read the Bible and you read it without any preconceived notions and or ideas, it's just so simple. It's just so easy. It's just so profound, and it is just making so much sense that, you know, there's just no way to mistake what is going on. It's just making perfect, total, and complete sense. And that's what we're doing, is making perfect, total, and complete sense as well, as we just look at the Bible and we don't look at the foolishness of the Pauline and the end time silliness that we get and that we hear, you know, from these folks that are trying to distract us and keep us from knowing and understanding the truth. Of course, the smoke affected the sun. Of course, the smoke affected the moon. Of course, the smoke affected the stars. And then it says that there will be people's hearts will be failing them for fear. Well, of course, their hearts are failing them for fear, because the city of Jerusalem has just been destroyed. It just makes perfect sense. It makes it very simple. It makes it very easy. And people are watching these things that are coming upon the earth. They're watching the very powers of the heavens be shaken, the powers of the temple itself being destroyed. Those are the heavenly powers in the Jewish and in the first century Judean context. Those were the heavenly powers. They were not only shaken, not only stirred, but they were thoroughly, totally, completely destroyed. So, of course, folks, it makes perfect sense that these things are specifically relating to the destruction of Jerusalem. Then you read verses 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, and they're dung. I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know how else to tell it to you. They're just dung. You know, Thomas Jefferson talked about a lot of the Bible being diamonds and most of it being dung. And all these things are dung. Verses 27 to 31, they're dung. They're dung because they completely disrupt the narrative. The construction of the language is odd. It was clearly, if you know anything about linguistics, and if you have even one objectively scholarly bone in your body, it's very clear to see that verses 27 through 31 completely disrupt the narrative. Their construction is completely different and odd, and they were added later by a translator. Verses 27 through 31 of Luke 21 were added later. Now, if you pick up in verse 32, it makes perfect sense again. This generation will not pass until all these things are fulfilled. This generation will not pass until all these things are fulfilled. And obviously, it makes, now it even makes logical sense, because Yeshua is talking to people. And he says, look, this generation that I'm speaking to, all of these things, these destruction in Jerusalem events, will be fulfilled in the hearing of this generation. And these things took place about 35 years, 36 years, maybe 40 at the most, after Yeshua spoke them. So it makes perfect sense there. Now, if verses 27 and 31, the dung is rolled in, talks about Jesus' second coming, then the generation he's talking to would not see those things happen, and Yeshua would have been a liar and a false prophet. But see, it's so easy when you just let the Bible talk and just let the Bible interpret itself. Verses 27 through 31 are clearly added because they make Yeshua a liar. But you see, the King James Diversion, Roman Catholicism, Roman Protestantism, they don't care about making Yeshua a liar. Truth be told, the design of the King James Diversion was to make Yeshua a liar. The design of Roman Catholicism is to make Yeshua a liar. The design of Roman Protestantism is to make Yeshua a liar. They make Yeshua a liar by inventing a plastic Jesus who is really just the Lord in a Halloween mask, and they disrupt this narrative. They throw in verses written by other people after the fact. It's as easy to see as the nose on your face if you know anything about linguistics, and it makes Jesus a liar. If 27 through 31 aren't there, then he talks about the destruction of Jerusalem and tells the people listening, this is going to happen in y'all's lifetime. Makes perfect sense. If 27 through 31 are added, it talks about this second coming. Whether you believe it's true or not doesn't matter at this point. Of course, it's false, but it talks about the second coming. And then Yeshua says, people, this is going to happen in your lifetime. And it didn't. It didn't happen. It did not happen in their lifetime. So I ask you, was Yeshua a liar? Was Yeshua in error? Or have we just discovered some dung in the Bible? I think it's pretty apparent, pretty plain, pretty clear what actually took place. You've got to really make up some garbage to explain this in modern eschatological terms, and they do. And they do so unashamedly. And while we're here, we might as well take a look at Matthew 24, because it actually talks about, you know, the same things that Yeshua is mentioning here as reference to the destruction of Jerusalem. It actually was not the next book. It's actually Luke was the eighth book of the New Testament, written in A.D. 63. Then the book of Acts was written. Actually, Luke and Acts were written at the same time. It was originally called the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles. But the next book after that is Matthew. So we might as well look at Matthew 24 because it has application, and it's also the next book chronologically written in Testament, at least as we're talking about written by the true apostles of Yeshua Jesus Christ. And in this instance, they actually got 8, 9, and 10 correct. It's the only time that the apostles' books were actually in order, three in a row. So very, very interesting stuff. Of course, they got Paul's all in order perfectly. But at any rate, we'll take a look at Matthew 24, written in A.D. 66, again, in response to Paul's fanciful end-time timeline. Let's see how we're doing with time. I get very excited. I get very carried away. I get very enthusiastic. We've still got about 10 minutes, 9 minutes, so we will press on and talk about Matthew 24 a little bit. It's a parallel passage to Luke 21. And there's one thing that you can always remember: context, context, context. The three rules of real estate are location, location, location. The three rules of biblical interpretation are context, context, and context. The three most important things in biblical interpretation are context, context, and context. So Yeshua's talking here in Matthew 24, and verses 1 and 2 give us context, context, context. It's the very same discussion that he was having with the apostles leaving the temple at Jerusalem. Wow, look at the big blocks. Hey, don't be so impressed. All of these blocks are going to be thrown down. Not one is going to be left upon another. And it's the same story as Luke 21 till we get down to verse 15, which is very, 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 very interesting because it ties Luke's commentary to that of Jesus and answers one of the great questions and shows one of the great lies. I hope you can hear me turning pages. It exposes one of the great lies of eschatology. And you know what? It used to scare me to death when I would find these things, but now it excites me. It makes me happy, makes me all juiced up because I'm showing you truth. And it allows us to understand things that we never, ever would understand if we just listened to the folks of big-time religion. Now, Luke said in Luke 21:20, when you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Luke intentionally used that word desolation to tie back to Daniel chapter 9, talking about the abomination of desolation. Keep that in mind, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that the desolation is at hand. Yeshua says in Matthew 24:15, when you shall therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, who's ever reading, let him understand. So Yeshua is tying Luke's talk about the desolation of Jerusalem being at hand. Let's read again what Luke said in Luke 21 and 20, and I'll keep my finger in it this time so you don't have to listen to me turn pages, but I do like to let you know that I am actually looking in the Bible. Luke said, when you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, then know the desolation thereof is nigh. Then let the people in Judea go to the mountains, get out, you know, don't even go down and pick up anything, just get out. When you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, its desolation is at hand, to tie back to Daniel. Then get out of Judea, he says. Yeshua, Matthew 24:15, when therefore you shall see the abomination of desolation, a direct tie back to what they had just read in Luke, but even more explicitly, Yeshua says, the abomination of desolation, oh, that was what Luke was talking about. That's what the mind of the reader said in the first century, and that's what the mind of the smart and interested and objective reader here says. Oh, Luke, we just read Luke because we're reading the Bible in chronological order. We're understanding the development of doctrine. Oh, so Luke just said, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, that's an abomination. Yeshua says in the next book written, when you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, what's the holy place? Jerusalem, maybe even the temple. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Can you see how clear that is? The abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet was, in the words of Yeshua and in the words of Luke, his apostle, it was the destruction of Jerusalem. Yeshua said that, and we discovered that because we followed the biblical revelation in the New Testament in order of the chronological books, the chronological order of the books being written, and we discovered Luke says abomination. Yeshua, right after that, ties back to abomination, but goes on to say abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. We go back and look at the abomination of desolation, and Daniel talked about it, and what you're being told today, my friends, is that the abomination of desolation is going to be in the future when the Dome of the Rock or the Mosque of Omar has been blown up. The red heifer, oh, God bless the red heifer. What a bunch of bull. The red heifer has been found. The Levitical priesthood has been restored. A temple has been rebuilt. Worship is going on in this new temple. And then here comes end time boogeyman, bad guy, Antichrist, coming into the temple. That makes so much more sense than to just believe what Luke and Yeshua plainly told us, that the destruction of Jerusalem was the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And when you see it happening, get the hell out of Jerusalem. Of course, it's much easier to believe Roman Catholicism. Of course, it's so much easier to believe Roman Protestantism. Of course, it's so much easier to believe these modern puppets in their pulpits preaching putrid garbage. Christianettes in the seats listening to the marionettes preaching. Makes me sick. That's why I'm telling you to unindoctrinate yourself. How much more of this are you going to take? How much longer are you going to stay willfully ignorant? You know, it's one thing to be ignorant because you don't have the information. And that's the true definition of ignorance. You don't have the information. You're ignorant. You just don't have the information. But once you have the information and you continue to remain willfully ignorant, you move from being plain, flat out stupid. And I don't mind telling you that. If you, having this information, continue to believe the lies of big-time religion, Roman Protestantism, Roman Catholicism, having the information, if you continue to believe that, you're stupid. You are S-T-U-P-I-D, and I am D-O-N-E with you. Don't have time for the stupid. Hannibal Lecter didn't like the rude. Jeffrey Daugherty doesn't care for the stupid. I just don't have time for you. It's super clear. It's super plain. It's super interesting. And I'm looking for people, and I'm here to serve people, to lead people, guide people, help people, inspire people that want to reclaim themselves and move up the levels of consciousness and become who they are supposed to be and follow the ways, the truths, and the life, and abundant life that Yeshua came to talk about. If you're not interested in that, I can't help you. I got nothing for you. And we've shown you clearly, without a shadow of a doubt, that the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet was the destruction of Jerusalem in A.D. 70. We're going to leave it right there for this week. We'll be back on Monday. It'll be the 27th of July. Until then, check out the website. Lots of new, super cool, interesting stuff. And a lot of great information for you as well. And so until we see you next week or in the interim on the website, I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, the Christian Whistleblower, reminding you to unindoctrinate yourself. We'll see you next week.
Stay connected with the Christian Whistleblower at www.christianwhistleblower.com. On Facebook, follow Jeffrey Daugherty and Jeffrey Daugherty Show, and on Twitter at NC Kabbalah. Visit christianwhistleblower.com today to learn how to create yourself and to live the life you'll love.